You're listening to KCSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Today is Veterans Day 2015, and we would like to thank all our veterans everywhere. Today we have a special segment with one of the veterans from Stanford. He is Roger Boas. He graduated from Stanford University in 1942, and the day following his graduation, he reported for duty at Camp Roberts, California, as second lieutenant of field artillery. Roger Boas was awarded a Silver Star for bravery for his work as a forward observer during World War II. He also came home with an undiagnosed case of battle rattle, which is today called post-traumatic stress disorder. We interviewed Roger Boas about his new book, Battle Rattle, a last memoir of World War II. Could you tell us the name of your new book and what Battle Rattle means?
It's called Battle Rattle, a last memoir of World War II. Battle Rattle really refers to an emotional and psychological disorder. In World War I, they called it shell shock. In World War II, where I served, it was Battle Rattle. Today, it's become known as a post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And I had a pretty bad case of it, and the war caused it, and that's why I named the book that.
Did you join the Army right after graduating from Stanford?
I graduated from Stanford actually when I was 20, believe it or not, and went in the Army the next day after graduation as a second lieutenant of field artillery. I was fairly naive. That is, I was an only child, and my parents and my grandmother, who were my immediate family, really sort of cosseted me. I could do no wrong, so to speak. And because of my mother's great interest in international affairs, I too was interested in international affairs. So I saw everything from a distance, a San Franciscan, looking at the world from afar. But when I got into the Army, things began to change. And when the training was over and we left England and crossed the Channel and went into Europe in June of 1944, things changed very rapidly for me. The killing started almost immediately. I hadn't been 2 days in Europe, in France, when my sergeant and I shot to death two German soldiers at close range. And I know that I felt awful about it, just awful. But toward the end of the war, I was in combat for 11 months straight. We sort of looked forward to killing the enemy. The sensitivity had left, and I had become a very different person. I felt pretty self-assured and confident that I was doing the right thing and acting properly while I was in combat. And I served with people that I'd been with in the Army for 3 years, starting with the, and we knew one another well and respected one another. And then the war ended. For me, it ended in Czechoslovakia. And I went back to Germany on occupation duty along with the rest of my battalion and division. Life was very pleasant on occupation duty. We had a little river there in the town and in Bavaria, and we volleyball in the morning and all that sort of thing. But I wasn't able to think too well, and I didn't realize this. And others thought much better than I did. They figured out, did we want to go back to university? Did we want to stay in the service? What did we want to do? I wasn't able to go through any of that sort of thinking. And all I wanted to do was come back home to San Francisco. And when I got back home, I hated it. And looking back, I wish I'd never done that. I wish I'd stayed in Europe, maybe gone to Oxford or some university in England. But when I came home, I was strictly out of step with society. And I couldn't think, and I couldn't make a decision. I couldn't focus, couldn't get along very well with people for any length of time, couldn't keep appointments, all that sort of thing. And that was all typical of someone suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Do you think the Army takes care of veterans who have post-traumatic stress disorder better now than they did in World War II?
I think they treat people much more efficiently today. In my day, no one really knew what battle rattle meant. We did have a division psychiatrist. We called him the battle rattle officer. But no one sought psychiatric help, and people just came home and suffered. Most of my colleagues who were officer colleagues in my outfit stayed in the Army and spent their remaining careers in the Army. And I think because of the psychological and emotional protection it afforded them, they didn't have to come out and make that big adjustment from being on the battlefield to a very different form of life as a civilian. And for me, who made that change, I did not handle it at all well. And there was no place to go. The Army had no psychiatric wards that I was aware of. The Army in those days was a very different place than it is today.
You spent almost 4 years in the Army during World War II. How were you trained to change from a Stanford student and become ready for combat duty in Europe?
We served for about 4 or 5 months in the Mojave Desert, which was a training place for armored vehicles, tanks, and so forth. And I loved the desert. I came to just love it. I led troops on a run every day, and then on weekends, if you could get a weekend leave, there was Palm Springs at one point, and then Las Vegas at another, brand new Las Vegas. And life was extremely pleasant. And in England, the pleasantness continued. I was lucky enough to meet a young member of the Women's Royal Naval, called him Renz. She was a terrifically nice person, and I saw England for 6 or 7 months. It was extraordinary. Then all of a sudden, I was in France, having crossed the English Channel in what we called a landing ship tank. And when we got to Omaha Beach, which is where we landed, there was nothing but stretchers, almost a mile of stretchers, of Americans that had been beaten up in combat and were now being shipped back to England to go to hospitals. You know, just a terrible sight. We went to a little French town away from the beach and up on the hill. The next day, went into a combat position. And I was assigned the job of reconnoitering the area to make sure there were no German enemy around. And my sergeant and I are walking down a road. This is a country road with orchards and trees and very narrow and sandy. And all of a sudden we see two Germans coming opposite us, fully armed. And we cried, halt. And they kept coming. And we killed them. And I've never gotten over that. And that killing continued 7 days a week for 11 solid months, right until the end. And it had a terrible effect on me.
Did the Army keep you informed about how bad Hitler was?
I knew how bad Hitler was because I was a political scientist, and I understood the Nazi system better than most, thought it was awful. I'm a Jew, made it triply awful, but I didn't have that hatred. And the hatred developed as time went on until at one point my battalion commander and I became what we were told were the first Americans to enter a concentration camp. The camp was called Ohrdruf in eastern Germany, and it was a subsidiary camp to the Buchenwald concentration camp. All of a sudden saw a bunch of bodies stacked high, and we raced into the place, Bob Parker, my battalion commander, and myself. And I never did get over it. It was just so horrible. I don't even like to think about it. I wrote about it because I had to write about it, but it was terrible. And it brought the war home to me and what the Nazis were doing to me in a fashion that it took me years to get over.
Did you lose many of your friends who joined the Army in World War II?
I had a number of friends at Stanford, classmates, who died in World War II. But the one that hit me the hardest was an extraordinary fellow named George Jackson. And George, in my senior year, became president of our student body. And he came from a little tiny town in Utah, and no one had ever heard of him. And he ran for president of the student body against a man who had become an All-American football player in his junior year named Frankie Albert. And George beat him because of his marvelous intelligence and political skills. George was in the Navy. He spent most of his time in the Atlantic and requested transfer and was transferred to the Pacific. And a week before the war was over, a steward on board his ship really went off his mind and went around shooting people. And among those he shot in his bunk to death was George Jackson. And on the 50th anniversary of the war, he was remembered. I wrote an article for him in the Stanford magazine. And the one who really put it right was the acting chancellor, Ray Lyman Wilbur. Wilbur said that George was just an exceptional person who took over that student body and led it in the right direction. And I always have felt that he would have been elected president of the United States. He had been president of his class up in Utah when he was in grammar school, president in high school, got a scholarship to Stanford so that he could afford to come for 4 years, and went from being an unknown to being the leader, strong leader of the entire student body. He's buried out here in Golden Gate National Cemetery near San Francisco. There are thousands of course, veterans buried there, many of whom I knew. He was one of the high costs of stopping Hitler in World War II.
Do you have any advice for people who are thinking of joining the army today?
To me, that's the most sensitive question you can ask, because I've got six grandchildren. I have said to them, and I keep saying to myself in my prayers, keep out of the military service. I can't think of anything that is good about war. I didn't feel that way at all when I left Stanford in 1940. It was only after I saw what war was like that I felt it was to be avoided at all costs. To avoid war, you need extraordinarily good government with extremely fine leaders and strong, what we call State Department, others call Department of Foreign Affairs, where they really know how to use diplomatic verbal negotiation instead of bullets and bombs. No question in my mind, Hitler had to be stopped. He was a maniac. World War II was justified. If we hadn't gone in and England had gone down, God knows what the world would be like today. But as to the other wars in Korea and in Vietnam, and much more recently, these maniacal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and now what's going on with us in Syria, etc., I think all one has to do is see the fact that there are now 4 million people displaced, refugees. I won the Silver Star and the Brown Star and 5 battle stars in World War II, and I am as anti-war as anyone you'll ever find. And I tell that to my grandkids. I don't know what good it'll do, but that's what I tell them.
Before leaving our guest, Roger Boas, who served in the Army for almost 4 years during World War II and recently published a new book, Battle Rattle, A Last Memoir of World War II, I wanted to know what he thinks his big accomplishments were after he got cured from post-traumatic stress disorder.
I'm rather pleased with two accomplishments. First and foremost was I served the city of San Francisco as its chief administrative officer for 10 years. Found I liked the job, and I think moved the city ahead. We built a huge sewer program. We built a convention center underground, and I'm very pleased with the way things turned out. And I also was reasonably successful in business, so that I had the family set up, a family now of about 15 people, including grandkids, so that they can survive economically. And surviving economically in the United States these days is becoming increasingly difficult.
Did you learn any leadership skills in the Army that helped you succeed in your business here in San Francisco?
I was a forward observer. We didn't command anything. We had a small crew. There were 11 of us forward observers. It was the most dangerous job in the field of artillery. So we weren't making command decisions. Then I was appointed the battalion adjutant in addition to being a forward observer, which meant that I represented the battalion commander in a variety of ways, especially when we were in England. And I had to make decisions with mayors and others of these little country towns in England in his behalf. And I learned something about leadership skills there. And I was 22 and then 23. What helped me a lot, first of all, I went to work for my dad, a terrifically nice guy. So he had a car business, and all of a sudden I found myself running it and having to make decisions, many of which were badly done. But I learned how to tell the difference between the wrong way and the right way forward. And then subsequently, as I became chairman of the Democratic Party of California for 2 years, I've been on the board of the Fromm Institute and lectured there for a long period of time. I've had to make decisions wherever I went. I find analyzing is tough. But once you come to a conclusion, I'm able to put those decisions into effect. I could not have done that when I came out of the Army. It took me time to learn how to do it.
You've been listening to KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. Thank you for joining us today for our segment about veterans from Stanford. And we would also like to thank our guest, Roger Boas, very much for his time and for today's interview. If you would like more information about Roger Boas' new book, Battle Rattle, please visit its website, battlerattlememoir.com. The website again is battlerattlememoir.com. If you would like a copy of today's interview, please download it from our website, moderntechnews.com. That's modernteknews.com. And please follow the link to Veterans.